Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 42. You know, a big old buzzword in our industry right now is storytelling. It's really important. Further, using data to tell your story. It's a critical skill for the analyst. Seems pretty easy, but so few people do it well. On this episode of the Power Hour, we're going to talk about it. So take a seat by the fire and listen to us spin you a yarn. And who, you might ask, could help Tim Wilson, my co-host. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Michael.
And, of course, me, Michael Hubling, hold forth on such a meaty topic. You might know him as the author of Web Analytics Action Hero. For 12 years, he was a leader in the consulting organization and an analytics evangelist at Omniture/Adobe. And today, he's the director of data strategy at Domo, where he helps customers with Domo adoption and data usage. And he also writes for this little magazine called Forbes. Yeah, it's Brent Dykes.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you.
Thank you.
So this topic around data storytelling, right, I think it's near and dear to all of us. Certainly you've spent so many years championing this cause. But maybe to start us off, let's talk about sort of some foundational or definitions around data storytelling, what it is and what it isn't.
So I define data storytelling as a structured approach for communicating data insights more effectively to an audience using narrative elements and data visualizations.
Well, that's awfully succinct.
Yeah, great show. We did it. So if you just write that down, I think that's probably what we should go with.
But how, I mean, do you feel like, I feel like there are people who say data storytelling but aren't really thinking through, I mean, I guess maybe the narrative piece is where a lot of times I feel like people said, oh, I had 22 slides, so therefore they were in a sequence, and a narrative is a sequence of things, therefore it was a narrative, and it very much was not. I mean, to me, it seems like storytelling is one of those things that is just really difficult to really have a narrative thread that is things linked together. And yet sometimes people just label stuff as, sure, I'm doing data storytelling.
Yeah, I would say a lot of people kind of look at data storytelling. I mean, a lot of, you know, work's gone into it from the data journalism side. And so you'll see a lot of that where a data visualization will be called a data story. And I think in some cases, a data visualization could qualify as a data story, but not always. And in many cases, it won't. And there's like five key elements that I see you need to have in order to have a data story. So first of all, you got to have a main point, right? You got to have a destination you're taking your audience to. And sometimes as analysts, what we like to do is sometimes we find all these really cool things and we start like just, you know, as Avinash Kosh would like to say, data puking. And I don't really like that term. I don't like thinking of vomit and all the times that I have vomited. But you just basically load up on all these really cool insights. But really, you got to have a main point that you're trying to convey to your audience. And I think that's the first thing. The next thing is, you know, the story itself has to take not a descriptive approach, but a explanatory approach. And so, you know, when we're describing things, we might say, well, you know, we're really focused on the who, what, and when. But when we're explaining something, we're going a little bit deeper and we're trying to help the audience understand what's happening in the data and why and how. And I think that's a key differentiator between, you know, a data story and maybe just a presentation with a visualization. So that's a key thing. And then the third thing, you kind of mentioned it already, Tim, where it's got to have, you know, a story has a kind of a linear sequence, you know. So if you think of like The Wizard of Oz, right? So there's like, first you have like this tornado touches down and then Dorothy gets caught up in that. Her house lands on the, I think it's the Wicked Witch of the East. And then she gets the shoes, and then she goes on this yellow brick road path where she makes, you know, she meets lots of interesting characters. She goes seeking the Wizard of Oz, and then he says, you know, if you want to go back to Kansas, you're going to have to go kill the witch. Now, this is a sequence of things that occur, And I also think that, you know, as we're telling a story, as we're looking at our data and trying to get to our key point or our main point, there are some data points along the way that we need to share to either set the context or to connect the dots for the audience. And then the fourth element is all these narrative elements. And if you think of the movie Up, you know, this is an example I like to share. At the beginning of the movie, there's this little segment. You know, it's only about 4 or 5 minutes long, very little dialogue at all. But, you know, through this interaction between Carl, the old man, and his wife, we kind of see this story. You know, we learn something about him. And we learn about all his struggles and challenges that they went through and everything, and then his wife dying. And so if we cut that from the movie, we just think this guy is a jerk. You know, we wouldn't think of him as a lovable kind of character and understand some of that context. So if I take that to a data story, we as the storytellers of the data, you know, or insight, we have to kind of set that context. We have to introduce the characters. We have to set the plot and the setting and kind of set that up so that, you know, people that aren't as familiar with the data, when they come in and they can appreciate the story, they can jump in and we can give them exactly what they need to hear in order to make that decision and take that action. And then the last piece, you know, and it's the piece that gets all the attention are the visuals. And, you know, and the visuals are obviously, you know, in a data story, data is very complicated, you know, and it can be overwhelming for a lot of people that aren't as familiar or aren't in the data all the time. And so our job is to go in there and to take those data visualizations and actually look for how can we convey an insight in a meaningful way that, you know, a layperson who maybe understands the business domain but doesn't understand all the facets of the data can quickly kind of come to a conclusion, make a quick comparison in the data visualization, and appreciate the point that we're trying to make. And, you know, those five elements are present in a data story. And you know, one of the questions you might have is, you know, does a dashboard convey a story? And if it's curated, yes, you could curate a dashboard so that it does convey a story. But an automated dashboard, perhaps in many cases, is just a collection of random data points, is not a data story itself. It could be a platform for somebody to construct or create a data story or identify data points in the data and then go and build a data story.
Well, I sort of feel like a dashboard is descriptive and it shouldn't be, you know, random data points. I agree it's not a story, but a dashboard should be, how is the weather today? You know, is it raining or is it sunny? It's kind of a at a glance fact, as opposed to a data story is more trying to get a level deeper into the what happened and what could we do about it. If I glance at a dashboard every day, I'm not going to remember, unless I'm some, you know, strange savant of some sort, I'm not going to remember what the dashboard said, you know, 13 days ago. So it's kind of meant to be at a glance, are things good, bad, or indifferent? Do I need to take action? Do I need to dig in? Whereas to me, part of with data storytelling is you're trying to actually, I think, hook into other parts of the brain so that it gets retained. So that, yeah, when you said, hey, that data story that you were told 13 days ago, or that presentation you saw 13 days ago, I can actually play back, oh, this was the takeaway, and I'm playing into the other parts of the brain to actually retain it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, story, you know, one of the things I frequently say is stories beat statistics. You know, and there's a couple of use cases that are fairly well known out there. There's the one that Chip and Dan Heath, the guys who wrote Made to Stick, they did a study at, I think it was Stanford, where they had they gave a bunch of students some data points and then told the students, okay, you got to argue a position on something like gun control or something. I don't remember what topic it was, but they had these students get up and for 5 minutes, they kind of do their pitch using data. And then afterwards, you know, the students probably thought the task at hand was to see who was the most persuasive. But actually what they did is they asked the students, how many of you can remember any of the data points that were shared? And only 5% of the students could actually remember any of the data points. And then they asked them, how many of you could actually remember a story that was shared? And only 10% of the students actually shared a story as part of their 5-minute pitch. And 63% of the students could actually remember one of the stories that was shared. So that's from a memorability perspective. A story is going to outclass statistics on that front. And then from persuasion perspective, there's, you may have heard of the study that Wharton and I think a couple other universities did, where they basically had the Save the Children charity, or basically funding African kids and trying to help them. And they did a study where they took one version and they took all this data on all the struggles and challenges that people in Africa had, and then built kind of like infographics, you know, like a brochure that kind of highlighted, you know, this many people in Angola are struggling, you know, these kids don't have clean water. And then in Mali, you know, other kids are, you know, 37% of the kids, whatever the data points were. And then what they did on another group, they created a different kind of test where they just took one kid, and I think her name was Rokia. She was a little 11-year-old in Mali, and told her story. And they told her struggles and what she went through. And so they had two groups of students, you know, they divided them up, had them take these two, or expose them to these two kind of formats. And then at the end, they asked the students, you know, you've heard about this charity, you know, we're paying you $5, you know, $5 $1 bills for doing this survey. You know, would you like to contribute to the charity? And then they found that the ones that had the infographic version, they donated $1.43, but the ones that saw the story of Rokia, they almost doubled the amount that they contributed. It was $2.38. So,
and there was another group that just had Sally Struthers doing a voiceover, and those people demanded that they get more than $5 after.
They get more money back. Yes.
They get more.
Yeah. So from a memorability and a persuasion perspective, storytelling is really powerful. And so if we just leave statistics on their own, they're not going to work as well. When we combine the statistics with a story, that's where we're going to have an impact.
Yeah. And actually, you see this played out even in the political arena, right? On this, politicians giving speeches will often pull one story out as an example of like their broader policy or platform.
Right. Yeah.
So that's pretty, pretty common. You know, it's interesting because it's hope for all of us artistic types, right? That's such an important part of analytics. You know, and you think, oh yeah, the data is so important in your ability to manipulate the data. But, you know, if you're listening and you went to a liberal arts school, that you can be a great analyst because of those things that you were just discussing.
But when we talk about a story, I guess I've got two different sort of things that I think challenge me. One is when you're telling a story, and the Save the Children is a good example, where what you're doing is using an anecdote, and with the data that could be a real customer, or it could be an archetype of a customer or a persona, or however you want to, you know, make them tangible. Just like when, you know, you're developing personas. I mean, that's kind of one way to go, which is the data supports this. And now I'm going to kind of weave in a very personal, not personal sharing your feelings, but personal, like trying to make it very tangible and real with an example. Is there another type of story though, that isn't necessarily it's not the individual, it's not the customer, it's not the anecdote, it's more, I don't know, it can be larger portions of data, you know, that this thing happened. And then because that happened, you know what, I'm going to use maybe a horrible example, you know, revenue's down. That's kind of the crisis. Well, we've dug into the data and we've realized that average order value is down. And we've dug in further and realized that our lines per order is down. Our revenue per line is fine. So it's classic analysis where you're kind of trying to break down. And that's certainly not how you tell the story, because that's in reverse. But then can you tell a story where you say, look, let's talk about what goes into revenue? Well, it's how many orders. And you know what? We're getting the same number of orders. Is that a valid type of story as well? Or is that still kind of too clinical and data-y? Or is it really kind of in the presentation? If done well with appropriate visuals, you can kind of help people understand the business better because you're illustrating the model and putting numbers behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's necessarily one approach, you know, and I would say the first rule of data storytelling is understand your audience, right? So if you know that your audience would respond to one type of story format and not to another, then you go with what works for your audience. That's pretty important. But yeah, I mean, there's different elements of storytelling. One is the classical is to have a hero or somebody who represents, you know, so Rokia was the hero of the story, essentially. And your cart abandoner person that you build a data-driven persona around could be that hero of your story. But that I don't think you necessarily have to be locked into always having somebody represented as a hero. in your story. I think there are elements of storytelling like surprise and suspense and different things that you can incorporate into a story, you know, and to get them engaged in the data, you know, it might be more of, you know, like to go back to your example, you know, how do you think revenue really comes together? You know, when we see a drop in revenue, what are all the different ways that that can happen? And, you know, and maybe it's, you know, it's part of your audience, like how deep do they know the data? Now, the one thing I think you have to be cautious about is what I call the analyst journey. So that's going down the path of, well, first I looked here, and then I took the data and I ran a linear regression, and then that didn't reveal anything. And then I got this other data set. When I combined it with this one, then that's when, and it's like, who cares?
It's the story of me. It's a story.
Yeah. Yeah. So nobody cares about the story of you.
Don't give them the book. Give them the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But take The Wizard of Oz. I feel like there are times, everybody's seen that movie a few times, where it feels like you are really just bouncing along with a bunch of adventure and excitement and events. But the real, I mean, you're really kind of waiting for them to realize that, oh, people are getting self-realization about themselves. But the real kind of climax is that the wizard's behind the curtain. Sorry, I didn't say spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, boy. We're going to get letters.
The tension between, you know, when do you want to have the reveal? Because I feel like that, and maybe it goes hand in hand with giving the analyst journey and telling yourself that's a story. If you have an hour scheduled and you're 45 minutes in, you either have to really have them hooked and interested if you haven't actually given them the answer. So how do you balance that? You want to tell a story. You want it to resonate. You want to have some emotion and tap into the other parts of the brain, but you don't want to not give them the answer so far into the meeting they might have gotten up and left for one reason or another.
So again, it goes back to knowing your audience. And I think this is based on a conversation we had maybe a year or so ago, where what do you do with that executive who's just like, give me the numbers, you know, give me the data, give me the insight. And they're not necessarily patient for that story to unfold and do the big reveal. So in those cases, you know, with a lot of executives, they're time compressed, they're give it to me kind of mentality. And I think that's where you shift to more of a trailer, as a movie trailer instead of the movie, right? So you give them the teaser or the trailer. You give them the information, you know, like I've done this analysis and I found that I've discovered a $2.2 million opportunity for our marketing campaigns, you know, how we can optimize them. And it's, you know, give them a little bit of the setting, a little bit of the setup. And that's where I kind of say, you know, what you're asking for at that point is permission to tell a story. And if they want to hear that story, then they're like, tell me more, you know, well, how did you get to that number? Oh, okay, well, let me show you the number, you know, and then now you've got their attention. They've given you permission to take more of a story approach. And then, you know, you have an engaged audience at that point.
Of course, that's a tall order for somebody who's 2 or 3 years into their career and they finally get an audience with the executive and they've sweated bullets and they have put together 75 slides. And what I agree with you that it's, well, you need to be flexible and you need to have your strongest opening and you need to have a couple of different ways that it can go. Like, I know I've found myself doing that, saying, well, this is fundamentally going to go one of two or three different ways. And let me kind of think through how I'd want to run with it. Cause I sort of know what the destination should be regardless, as opposed to, you know, no, damn it, I'm going to tell you my story, or no, I gave you the punchline and you were supposed to ask the tell me more question and you didn't. So I'm screwed. I don't know. Does it just come with practice? If you go in thinking you're going to try to do that and then it's just basically critiquing after the fact, looking into what you could have done differently.
Yeah. I mean, if I was in that situation where I had that big, you know, this is my first big moment, my big opportunity with that executive, there's no way I would go in there guessing on anything. I would be talking to their, you know, I'd try and get an audience with their direct reports to kind of say, hey, I'm going to be meeting with Nancy and Nancy, you know, this is my first big presentation. And, you know, she asked me to do this analysis and how, you know, so you're going to be talking to her reports and saying, you know, how do you think she'd want to see this? Or how does she typically take data? You know, maybe even crafting, here's what I was thinking of showing her the data. And then her reports might say, oh, yeah, no, she's going to want to see this and that. And, you know, if it really did rest a lot of a lot did rest on that one opportunity, and you know, and I've invested a lot of work. I wouldn't want to just, you know, screw it up. So, you know, I think the key thing is to understand your audience, and, you know, and I think, you know, I had a recent experience where I had an executive telling me how this, you know, our CMO would want to see things, and got his advice on how to structure the presentation and how to handle things. And the presentation went great. So, you know, getting that insider information is really critical, because, you know, I've also screwed up. I've also gone into presentations and I've taken the wrong approach, and then I'm either backpedaling or maybe modifying on the fly, or, you know, or doing the Homer Simpson. I just missed my window of opportunity, and now it's going to be that much harder the next time I try and present something.
Yeah. And for situations where you might get surprised, it's always good to have sort of that elevator pitch, or I always tell people have a 30-second, 5-minute and full version.
Right.
Because then you know, if they've got, oh, hey, what's going on with this, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, do you have a couple minutes? And then you can give them the 5-minute version. Or if they're, you know, you're just in the elevator and you've got till the door opens, you do the 30-second version. But yeah. So there's a lot of times when the story that needs to be told isn't just one person or one group's data and story to tell. In fact, probably most large companies, that's true. So what have you seen working well? And if I'm accidentally teeing up like a softball for a Domo pitch, just avoid that. What about when your story is only part of the bigger story? What have you seen, or what do you advise people to do in those scenarios to craft sort of the broader story, or the, I don't know if it's a meta narrative, but the overarching narrative of the business and what should be done?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important. You know, you may have found an interesting insight in the data that you have access to. And if your spider senses are tingling that this is bigger than just, you know, the data that you're currently accessing, then that would be where I think you got to be careful sometimes, because you can get really excited about an insight that you see in the data, which can then be easily countered or better explained in another data set. And so before I even craft the story at that point, you know, I'm really still exploring the story. Do I have a story? Can I stand on this story? Is this insight that I have really something that we can run with? And it also goes back to action. You know, if you think about, you know, if you want to take action on this insight, is that across multiple teams working collaboratively on taking action on that insight? Or is it isolated to the one team that the data that I have is influential on them? So I think those are some of the factors that I would think of is, do I have a sense that maybe this is bigger than just, I need to confirm or bring in additional data to enrich the story I'm telling? And then obviously, you know, what level am I telling the story? And if I'm looking at marketing data and I'm trying to influence marketers to do something, then that may be sufficient. If I'm trying to change a process that the company has in terms of how we operate, which touches marketing, but also maybe touches sales or touches customer service, you know, then obviously I'm going to need to get help maybe from other people where I don't know that data set. You know, I'm going to have to go to an expert for the Salesforce data. I might have to go to an expert for Eloqua or some of these other systems where I don't have the expertise in. And at that point, it may become more of a team effort than just me as the single data storyteller. Maybe it's, you know, we're going to have to collaborate on this and tell a unified story across these different data sets that hopefully then, you know, influences whatever change or action you want to occur.
The upside of that is that you actually then probably wind up getting some cross-functional collaboration, and therefore probably you start turning the ship a little bit in some small way with people from different departments who are working together. The flip side is it may be 6 months before you can actually get everybody on the boat to actually leave the dock.
It does take time. I used to actually run a weekly meeting in my analyst career called Story Time, where I invited specific people from different groups, and we would all bring our story or data, what we're seeing, and work together to sort of say, what's the overarching message? And it took a long time for us to realize that's what we needed to do, and that who the right people were from all the different teams.
Was that a team of analysts who were kind of validating that you're not chasing something prematurely, you're thinking it through and you're collectively building the story? Or was this, you weren't trying to convince, you weren't telling the story?
There's a lot of things that can influence outcomes, right? It could be our brilliant marketing campaign. It could be, you know, we just got a great product and frankly, no matter how you market it, it's going to sell like hotcakes. It could be that unbeknownst to you, it's over there going viral on, you know, Snapchat. So those kinds of things are the things that you want to gather people together to like let you know, well, what are you seeing from how you look at this and kind of incorporate that all into sort of the overarching story. And so it worked really well because then when we would go into business review meetings or presentations, we would have that perspective from that other team to sort of say, and what we're hearing from other people is this is also, you know, so on and so forth. And then we can kind of bring a more holistic message together, which I think in a lot of times, certainly in digital, can be lacking, you know, digital data. And that's, you know, me and Tim and probably most people who listen to this podcast, that's our specialty. But digital data always has to, for most companies, has to be translated back in. And so our ability to be effective with insights has a lot to do with how we translate our stories back into the business metrics. So I think those things are really important and useful.
Any opportunity to get additional context, especially when you see something weird in the data that you can't explain, you know, being able to reach out to other people who may have additional context that can really, oh, here's why, you know, an example of this was I was working with a customer and they had noticed a drop in their traffic on their site. And this is a high tech company. And I went in, I was able to isolate it down to search traffic back in the days when we had keywords.
A moment.
Remember those days?
A moment. Wait, can we take a moment of silence for the...
Hold on. We're all pouring out a little bit of our drink.
And so the interesting thing was, is as I was analyzing, I was noticing that a lot of this traffic was coming from MSN. And so this MSN traffic had no keywords associated with it, which was kind of weird. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, all of the drop in your traffic to your site is from this decrease in traffic coming from MSN with no search terms. And I thought that's kind of weird. And then as soon as I brought that up to the customer, they were like, oh, now I remember. Yeah, like MSN told us that we had a free trial promotional placement on their portal site for their small business center. And they, you know, we got some traffic from them from that article or that placement or whatever. And then that expired recently. So they had the context on their side. I was just the, you know, external analyst doing this, but I didn't have the full context for what was going on within their business. And they did. And just, you know, sometimes if we don't have the full context, and it may be your at the company even, and you didn't know that PR is doing something on their side with some kind of initiative, or paid search just rolled out a new vendor and they're trying some new things. And you never know, you know, unless you talk to people and you're maybe even sharing the insight. Like, I don't know why this spiked or there's this dip or why things changed this month. You know, can any idea that you have, you know, and then once they tell you, it's like, oh, now you've got a story, you know, you've got more color to the story that you can then share with your stakeholders.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Context is so important for analysis.
And I guess this almost brings up the double-edged sword. If you tell a fantastic story that's super memorable and then you realize a week later that you were missing some context, then unwinding that, there's like, well, you don't want it to be, you want it to be memorable enough that if you reinforce it, it sticks, but you know, in case you have to walk it back.
Well, and actually though, that's another challenge that businesses face is influential people and good storytellers, not necessarily great analysts, grab a hold of data and decide they're going to tell the story and they start moving people in a certain direction and you're like, no, stop. What do you guys think about how do you manage that? Like, it's sort of a governance question, but it's sort of a soft one, right? Who's allowed to go in and give us insights and data stories?
I mean, mistakes can be made. And if somebody's running with data that not necessarily, the right data? You know, it's a tricky situation. You have to look again at who those individuals are. What are the repercussions of changing or shedding, you know, the true light on something? I mean, there was a recent example that I heard of where a vendor was providing some metrics to one of our customers at Domo, and then we replicated essentially the rules or the way that they are tracking that data in Domo, and the numbers weren't the same. And at that point, it's like, oh, well, I guess Domo's got it wrong. And then they went double checked again, verified that no, the way we're tracking this information is correct. So the customer then went back to the vendor and said, you know, we're seeing different numbers here. Why, what's going on? And what happened was they had some rules in place that a few of those rules were actually not updated. And so actually the data that we saw in Domo actually shed light on this vendor hadn't really updated their rules, and actually they needed to actually go and fix it on their side, which was interesting. But I guess the thing you've got to do when you're looking at the data is, you know, maybe share the insights that you have with that individual or that team, and see if you can have them, you know, like talk about the sources, how are they getting the data? I mean, at the end of the day, hopefully these are data driven people and they respect the data. And sometimes it's assumptive, you know, and it's just an assumption. The example would be, you know, there's this customer in Japan and they were seeing their revenue go down year for year. And everybody in the Japanese division of this e-commerce company were like, oh, that's all because of the currency fluctuation that's occurring, you know. And basically, you know, the executive at this in this org was basically watching people wash their hands of this drop in revenue. And so he actually had an analyst go in and actually do the statistical analysis to then verify, you know, is it the currency that's the factor here? And the analyst was able to determine, no, it's not. It's got nothing to do with the currency. And once the executive had that information, he was able to go to his team and say, it is not about the currency at this point. And so that took away maybe it was a mental blocker in their minds that they were powerless. You know, obviously you can't influence currency to affect what you're doing. But once he removed that, then they were like, oh, okay, well, let's see what's going on. And they were actually able to identify a significant enhancement to their marketing performance once they had removed the currency element from it. So, I mean, data has got to be the solution, and obviously you're going to have different data sets and different opinions and things, and hopefully, you know, you can influence change or acceptance of the right data by showing, you know, revealing, you know, what's going on, and it's, you know, can be challenging. It's hard to it's hard for people, you know. Obviously, then it becomes personal, where people feel embarrassed or maybe at fault for using or trusting or making decisions on bad data. I mean, it can be a delicate situation, and so I would recommend that you don't start wielding the sword of data and the truth of data, you know, through lots of people. You know, remember that budgets could be shifted based on the new data you have. You know, people can be embarrassed. Power can decrease. I mean, these are all interpersonal, emotional responses that can be generated to this. So I would be careful. And again, it goes back to your audience. Know your audience.
It's interesting as we're talking and the whole, I mean, it is time consuming, right? To say, if I want to tell a good story, I've got to, one, be damn sure that it's an accurate story. I have to craft the story. I have to know my audience. I may have to do some trial runs of telling the story because I have to edit it. One of those things on the accuracy, you know, I've got my system. I mean, the classic one, take media, display media, and they've got their pixels and we've got our web analytics and we're looking at it. Nobody's expecting them to match up. But the fact is, to me, I kind of want to collaborate and say, if we can come up with if we're off by 20%, that's really not that bad. If it's trending in the same direction, these are totally different data collection mechanisms. I always feel much better when I have triangulated. And sometimes that's within the web analytics tool. Say, well, I'm going to look at look at the data this way. Now, in theory, I can make a segment and look at something totally different, and it should sort of show the same thing. Okay, once I've seen it twice and it's showing directionally the same thing, I've got a lot more confidence. I tend to be, the bigger the insight or the aha, the more I want to go find another person to find the same thing with their data. You know, it's kind of the opposite of a single version of the truth. I want to find three different versions of the truth and say, you know what, they're all close enough that we can get on the same page. And that's a good way, I think, to usually loop those people in. And if they say, well, we're seeing the exact opposite, well, then you're probably uncovering a data issue, and there's value in that too. I die a little bit. Like, we can't really count that as a business win at the end of the day, that we found messed up data in our system and we've been making decisions on that data for a while. But the fact is, finding it is a hell of a lot better than not finding it and proceeding for another year or two. So I don't know. It just took me down a tangent of when people are like, no, my data is right. Like, we're not arguing about which data is right. We're trying to figure out how do we reconcile it so that we're comfortable that both are right enough that we're all comfortable with the story that we're telling.
No, I found that even combining data from different places. So, I mean, the classic example is leveraging sort of like a voice of customer data set with your digital data to provide a qualitative backbone to a quantitative data set is really helpful for kind of getting unity around that as well. Yeah, this is a great discussion. And I feel like we just don't, I mean, we never have enough time to really cover it, but I feel like I could talk about this for about two more days, but we can't. So let's wrap up. But before we do that, there's a segment we like to do on the show called Last Call, where we go around and talk about something we found that's interesting or fun or cool that maybe people might want to check out.
Well, if you're interested in this topic of data storytelling, I actually published a really comprehensive article on the subject on March 31st on Forbes. And the title of the article is Data Storytelling, the Essential Data Science Skill Everyone Needs. But yeah, it goes into a lot of the ideas that I have around data storytelling and how powerful it can be, you know, for anyone really that uses data. And people who are using data today is expanding. You know, it's not just the analysts, not just the data scientists, but it's everybody, you know, everybody down to frontline employees sometimes are trying to use data and tell a story. So
you're not by any, I mean, I don't know the answer to this. You're not slated for any upcoming conferences where you're going to be conferences or webinars where you'll be talking about data storytelling. I feel like I've seen you speak on it a few times and it's very compelling and with visual and audio as opposed to just audio.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't have anything planned, but I'm always open to people, you know, if they're looking for somebody to talk on the subject, I really enjoy presenting on it and would love that opportunity.
Cool.
Tim?
So I'll go a little more whimsical, a little older school. So The Story of Mass, I kind of stumbled across this on Netflix, and my youngest, my daughter, we watched it when she was 10. She's now 11. And it's kind of fascinating. It goes all the way back to, you know, the discovery of zero, you know, how long we went without having zero, and kind of early trigonometry and the need to be able to measure non-square areas to figure out land and taxes back, you know, way back when. It's a 4-episode series. If you've got a burgeoning analyst as a child, it's appropriate to watch with them. The guy who does it is a British mathematician. So as John Oliver would say, he sounds British, so it even sounds smarter and it's fun to listen to. But it's a neat little nerd Netflix time.
Nice.
What's your last call, Mr. Helbling?
Well, I ran across something and I feel like I've known about it, but ran across it again recently and I'm just find it constantly amazing and useful. It's a website where you can grab mock data for anything. It's called mockaroo.com. But you just put in a couple simple things, hit the button, and it'll spit out, like, you know, a CSV file or something with just all that data, which is super great for mocking stuff up or, you know, getting some stuff, because from time to time you want to do stuff like that. I mean, you know, work with real data most of the time.
Well, if you're mocking up a dashboard, I mean, you're right. Like, you actually lose credibility when you say, oh, every one of my little spark lines is exactly the same. And you try to tell them that, no, it's just the mock-up. If you can throw some
variation,
it's cool.
In there.
Mock-up. So, yeah, it's cool.
Fun little tool. I can't remember where I heard about it, but somebody told me about it.
Is there a Domo connector for Mockaroo? That would be awesome.
We actually use Mockaroo on some of our yeah, mock-ups and stuff.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if there's a connector. There might be.
Well, it's given that awesome.
If you want to just share random data within your organization.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Look at this amazing chart. Yeah. This is all random. What's the story of this data? Chaos. No, but it does spit it out in a CSV, which would be very easy to import into a tool like Domo.
Or R.
Or Tableau. Are we allowed to say that?
Or Excel.
Or Excel. Well, just open. Anyway, so this has been great. Brent, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a great conversation. As people have been listening, as you've been listening, if you've got comments, you've got questions, feel free to ask them or reach out to us on our Facebook page, also on the Measure Slack. We'd love to hear from you. And, you know, if you happen to be on iTunes near our page and you wanted to rate this podcast, we would love that. It does something for us. I think we win prizes.
We hear other podcasts really ask people to do that. So we feel like to put on our big boy pants, we should do the same.
We copy those podcasts and asking for the same thing. So at some point there's a winner and we just want to be in the running. All right. Thanks for listening. For my co-host, Tim Wilson. Thank you, Brent Dykes. And remember, keep telling data stories.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Facebook.com/AnalyticsHour or at AnalyticsHour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Let's get it on. Hi, everyone. I still hear background noise, Tim. What?
What? What?
Coming knock on my door. We've been waiting for you. All right.
Since he uses headphones, he can't hear any of that.
I did not hear any of that.
Well, if you had to turn the fan down, so if you get too warm, you're just going to take your shirt off and...
Yeah, J.R. Smith style. What's up? Cleveland native. For the greater glory of, you know, analytics and something. I don't know that about you, by the way. In fact, Brent, have we ever actually met in person before?
We have.
Well, that's woe to me, because I do not remember it. No.
Okay.
I'm a professional.
Okay.
I suffer for this podcast.
So, Brent, what is it?
I feel like
our moderator is not on his game tonight. Today.
I'm getting there.
Well, and I think there's also the... No, I agree. Well put. It's rare, I think, for me to see where somebody's gotten their hands on data. Well, I take it back. I've seen people just go on and make, I'll walk that one back.
I speak with pictures, mostly internet memes.
Yeah.
This could be a pain in the butt to edit, Tim. I'm sorry.
Rock flag and data storytelling.